Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Hi, how you doing? Feeling well today?
You know, a lot of us are dealing with some colds and bugs of various kinds. That's my story anyway. I'm Neil Stavem. Great to have you along. Ted, you doing all right?
Doing okay. I guess I got to hit the airborne and all that stuff to prevent.
Is that you're into
sick.
That? Okay.
Yeah, my household has some sickness going around though.
All right. I just had an orange, so we're gonna ask our guest today about his best recommendations. So, and he actually would speak from a knowledgeable base because he's actually an award-winning and board-certified family physician. And we're going to ask the doctor today. In fact, we're opening up the phone lines for the entire hour. So if you have a medical question, something you've been wondering about, or you know, if you're saying, it hurts when I do this, this is your time to call. 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. You've heard our guest been on with Dr. Bill Meyer from time to time in the morning. Part of our connection with the Christian Medical and Dental Association, Dr. David Stevens is on with Bill every other week or so. And when David's traveling and not available, Dr. J. Scott Reese joins in. Again, we said he's a board-certified and award-winning family physician. He's practiced and taught in private and academic settings and thriving at the intersection of practice, business, and ministry. He's also functioned as a medical consultant for major news networks and provides some weekly radio commentary for radio stations in Chicago and across the state of Florida. And he previously served as the National Director of the Christian Medical and Dental Association's Campus and Community Ministries. He's written a great book, too, about having your best doctor visit ever. So we'll talk about that as we talk health today, because it is a gift, and we want to be good stewards of the gift of health that God gives us. And so Dr. Reese, welcome to Connecting Faith. Good to have you on.
Well, thank you so much, Neil. Super to be with you today.
We're talking to Dr. Reese via Skype today, so appreciate that good quality. I mentioned I'm just coming off a cold, and all my grandkids seem to have various bouts of cold and flu. And I'm just wondering, is this just because we happen to be living in the upper Midwest, or if we're all in Florida, would it be cold and flu season?
Well, it might not be bad to be in Florida with the forecast that you guys just talked about, but cold and flu are sort of across the country right now. It is the season indeed. All the sniffly, runny noses, the cough, the body aches, the chills, the notes off from work and school. It's happening everywhere, Neil.
So, and why is that? Is it because, I mean, we're inside more, or what, is it just the season, like kind of like a spring and summer and fall?
Well, the truth is these upper respiratory infections, you know, the common cold, they're actually all the time. They're happening year round. But what happens is, you know, you of course see a lot of the temperature change, the fluctuation change, and then the close quarters. You know, you think about kids back in school. You know, Jody and I are blessed with three wonderful kids, but, you know, many times of the year, what they are is petri dishes, right? They share their viruses around, and they bring them back home and share with mom and dad and the other siblings, and that's just kind of how life goes. So we see that a lot in the close quarters in the winter, inside a whole lot more, not outdoors. And then you get the seasonal influenza coming through on top of that, and there you have it. It's that season right now.
Okay. So do we is the remedy that we feed a cold to starve a fever, or the other way around? I mean, what is your advice for avoiding the spread?
Yeah, feed a cold, starve a fever, you know, starve a cold, feed. I don't even know what that means, to be honest with you. We didn't cover that in med school, but the truth is that really probably isn't really helpful one way or another. But what I'm really glad about, Neil, is the increasing understanding that to treat one of these upper respiratory infections, and by that I mean you start getting a scratchy sore throat, and then it moves to some nasal congestion, you're blowing junk out of your nose, get a little bit of a cough, maybe low-grade fever, maybe no fever, the classic cold symptoms. People are starting to realize now that the solution for that is not running to your doctor and demanding an antibiotic. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, for years we did that and thought, well, maybe we're helping. But the truth is, we only made things worse. We increased all this antibiotic resistance. So here's the reality about the antibiotic. Should I have one? Should I not have one? The truth is, those upper respiratory infections are viral in nature. They are not bacterial. And antibiotics, why, they treat bacteria. They don't treat viruses. So number one, if your doctor gave you an antibiotic for these common cold symptoms, A, it wouldn't work because it's not going to kill the virus. B, it might make things worse because it'll kill off all the bacteria, including the healthy bacteria that are trying to help you fight this thing as it is anyway. So symptomatic treatment is really the way to go. So there are a few things that I generally recommend, assuming that people aren't allergic or on other medicines like blood thinners that could interfere with it. So some symptomatic treatment like, you know, some ibuprofen or Tylenol, right? Generic Motrin, generic Advil, which is ibuprofen, or Tylenol or generic acetaminophen. Those things can help. They help with the body aches. If you have a child, they can help them feel a little better, keep their appetite up, maybe help that sore throat so they drink enough fluids. So that can be very helpful. You know, you mentioned some of the, you know, echinacea and, you know, zinc and, you know, airborne and all that early on. You know, there's some science behind that. It's kind of questionable. Maybe some zinc can help during those things. Maybe some extra vitamin C, maybe some echinacea. So I usually suggest to people, you know, a general vitamin supplement with zinc and, you know, vitamin C and some other vitamins in there, maybe some B vitamins. There's one, you know, Emergency. I'm not, you know, connected to them or I don't get any revenue. I just use it myself when I get sick. You know, I think that can kind of maybe help strengthen the immune system a little bit, give it a little relief. And then it comes down to drinking plenty of fluids and getting plenty of rest, because the more rest you get, the quicker you're going to get better.
Hmm. I mean, that sounds kind of simple, actually. Rest, your body does recover during rest, doesn't it?
It does. It seems so simple, but by golly, it seems so hard to do. I don't know why that is, right? We got life going on. It's hard to slow down for a lot of people.
Yeah. So, you know, you're talking about antibacterial. It reminds me, you know, everybody's all the soap's antibacterial now. Is that, are we doing a good thing with washing our hands continually in antibacterial soap? Because we should wash our hands a lot, right? Especially when it's cold and flu season.
Oh, absolutely. And that's a great question. I'm really glad you asked that question. What about all those antibacterial soaps? Because you're right. On one hand, hand washing is key. I mean, you know, you come in contact with somebody, you go to church, let's say, of course, everybody's turning around, greeting your neighbor there and shaking hands and, you know, passing around the viruses. You know, the first thing I do afterwards, you know, I shake hands, you know, give a hug or whatever. And I go to the bathroom, wash my hands, because you know you're sharing those viruses. Same thing during the day, at work, at school, whatever. Frequent hand washing can be good, you know, 15, 20 seconds under there, just regular old soap. But then, of course, now we have this antibacterial soap, right? But remember what we just talked about, all these common illnesses, they're not bacterial anyway. They're viral. So again, here we go. Those antibacterial soaps, do they help viruses? Nope, not at all. But what they do, in fact, some studies have been following and tracking this, as we see these increasing use of antibacterial soaps, you know, they're sort of paralleling some of our resistance problems. And now all that stuff's being flushed into the drain, going through everywhere else and killing other sort of parts of our, you know, ecosystem. And so what effect is that having? So we're actually discouraging the use of antibacterial soaps, believe it or not, unless you have a specific, you know, medical condition requiring it. But by and large, a general soap is as good as anything, quote unquote, antibacterial, and perhaps a whole lot safer for you, your family, and the environment.
You know, you're talking about, you know, shaking hands at church. I mean, we do it kind of without thinking. Door handles, is hand-to-hand contact as likely a place to get to sort of share these viruses, or is it, you know, flying in planes, the recirculated air, or are there some, you know, maybe it's wearing a cap outside with our hair, or not wearing a cap outside in the cold, or is that a myth?
Yeah, well, no, those are true. You know, hand, you know, when you come in contact with those viruses, whether it be, you know, someone is just, you know, sneezing to their hand and passes along through a handshake, or of course these virus particles are airborne as well. You want to read some fascinating and maybe scary studies. Look at some of these things where they measure particles that are aerosolized from a sneeze or a cough. not only do they go across the room, but they can linger in there for hours. And so, you know, no need to panic. I mean, this is why God gave us immune systems. I'm scaring everybody right now. I know. Oh, I'm never going to breathe again. But yeah, you think about that. Or maybe it's better not to think about it and say, okay, Lord, we'll do what we can. We can be prepared what we can. We'll get a cold once in a while and we'll sort of work our way through it.
Okay. Hey, by the way, we're talking health in general. It's we're going to be good stewards of the good health that God gives us, recognize it is a gift from Him, and we're getting some great advice today from award-winning family physician Dr. J. Scott Reese. He's with us today on Connecting Faith. Our phone lines are open for your medical questions. Maybe there's something that you've been wondering about, a health issue in your family or someone that you care about. I'd like to get some insight on that, or maybe it has to do with, you know, some of the ads on TV and of the various maladies of which there seems to be a pill for. And or you're wondering about, you know, having a good conversation with your doctor. Talk about all those things in the moments ahead. And we welcome you to join in the conversation. The phone number is 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. And our phone lines are open this hour as we ask the doctor today. Dr. J. Scott Reese joining us today via Skype. And looking forward to having more conversation just ahead. If you want to submit your question online, you can do that as well. Go to myfaithradio.com. And click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link there, and you can just submit your question that way. And we'll talk health and healthcare coming up. The hour. It's open phone day today here on Connecting Faith with Dr. J. Scott Reese, a medical professional award-winning family physician, and his clinical career has included faculty appointments at Indiana University School of Medicine and Butler University, and has spanned from academic medicine to clinical research to full-time private practice, and continues to see patients in the Tennessee and Virginia area, and he's with us today via Skype. We're taking your questions at 877-933-2484, and Dr. Reese, I did have just a follow-up question. We're talking about antibacterials. So someone wanted to know, can overuse of the antibacterial gel make it lose its effectiveness? You know, everybody's, you know, got the little hand containers. They're all over. Overuse of those, does that matter?
Right, right. So sort of the hand sanitizing gels that you don't need water with. There's no evidence that can sort of diminish its effectiveness right now. In other words, build resistance. In fact, the studies have been very supportive, actually, of those gels, especially in environments where you don't have a sink readily available. Let's say, you know, you're at the workstation and there's no sink or whatever, but you're greeting clients, or as the case may be, or as, you know, as I do, lead teams overseas on medical mission teams, and getting clean water, wash your hands is virtually impossible in many settings. So we'll use those things. So yeah, very, very helpful. Now, probably two cautions about that. Where can you get into trouble with those hand sanitizing gels? Number one, if you're allergic to some of the fragrances. Unfortunately, a lot of those are heavily scented and can cause some flare-ups of wheezing or asthma or allergic type of phenomena. If not in you, then maybe in your colleagues. So if you notice, you know, you go back to your office and somebody next to you starts coughing and wheezing quite a bit, well, you know, maybe better check your hand sanitizer gel. The other problem that we'll see sometimes is because those gels are alcohol-based and not water-based, they can be drying. And, you know, here we are in a winter environment. The humidity is low anyway. Dry skin drying out is a problem. So if you overuse those, sometimes you can get the drying and cracking of the skin that gets exacerbated a bit by that. So you may need some unscented lotion sort of to moisturize it if you're using that a bunch. But those are really the only two problems that typically happen with those hand sanitizing gels.
You mentioned taking mission trips. I know it's something you're very passionate about and do regularly. It's interesting, I think, that what our health issues in this country are probably a lot more lifestyle choice related. How does it differ as you travel around the developing world compared to our health issues here?
Well, it is very different, as most of our listeners would imagine, no doubt, Neil. You know, I just had lady in the emergency room a few days ago and had an issue with her foot that was going to require some surgery to fix a fracture. And she literally started having a panic attack and saying, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm not going to be able to wear my shoes, and I'm going to be able to do this. I'm not going to be able to do that. And I sort of smiled and tried to reassure. And I walked out and I said to the student next to me, yeah, you know, hashtag first world problems right there. You know, those aren't the issues that we see overseas, right? Overseas, it's difficult to access any care at all, you know, let alone some of the issues that we face. So, you know, people just, when they come to get help, if there's a medical team, or maybe they make their way to a missions hospital and walk for hours and hours or sometimes days to get there, I mean, advanced disease, because there's simply nowhere else to go. So it's a powerful thing to do. In fact, Neil, I'm getting ready to go in just a few weeks, leading a team to Nicaragua, as I've done for many years. And we'll experience a lot of those things. Now, sure, people will get common things there as well. They'll have pneumonia. They can have heart disease, diabetes. They can get colds, upper respiratory infections, but a lot of other issues too. You know, I remember when I, a couple of years ago, took a team to Lebanon to treat the refugees that were streaming over from Syria. And let me tell you, that was profound, profound stories that we were hearing. It's just break your heart kind of things happening over there. But they would encounter actually a particular parasite that's endemic there, would need certain type of shots to get rid of that. So it depends on where you are in the world. But we're, you know, by and large, you know, no matter what you hear on the media about the state of our healthcare in our country, we have it far, far better than just about the entire rest of the world. God has given us an amazing blessing with access to healthcare here.
We'll maybe circle back to that here in the moments ahead. Let's take go to the phones, though. Our phone lines are open, by the way, taking your medical questions at 877-933-2484. And Matt in Minneapolis, you're on with Dr. Reese. Go ahead.
Hi. I work in the healthcare field, so I feel like I get in contact a lot with some of these antibiotic-resistant drugs or antibiotic-resistant like staph kind of stuff. And I'm just curious, if I had one of those like long-term, what would be some of the – I mean, can my body fight it on its own, or is it something like – you know, what kind of symptoms would I have if I had one for a long, long time?
Well, Matt, first, thanks for what you do in healthcare. I mean, Lord bless you for, you know, that. And you're right. We're, people like us, we're exposed to a lot of things. And that's just kind of the nature of the job and the calling that God's given to us. And there are some bacteria out there. Of course, you referenced staph, or, you know, people know maybe MRSA, or the methicillin-resistant staph aureus is what that stands for. And very, very common, and some other resistant bugs that are there. Well, the truth is that most of us in healthcare are probably colonized by things like MRSA and some of those resistant bacteria. What that means is we have it maybe on our skin, just dwelling there, but not causing a problem, not causing an infection per se. It's just colonized. In fact, everybody in the world is colonized with bacteria, right? If you, we go here, or we go to, you know, London, or we go to Sydney, Australia, or we go to Hong Kong, or we go to Kenya, you culture somebody on the skin, you're going to find bacteria. Everybody is colonized, but God has given us this incredible organ, the largest organ in our body, called the skin, that protects us from almost all of those infections. And so this, the colonization is there in, you know, many, many health workers, but it really doesn't cause symptoms. So what symptoms do you get from colonization? The answer is none, because by definition, colonization doesn't cause symptoms. Now, if you were to get infected, what symptoms would that cause? Well, quite honestly, it would cause the same type of symptoms that somebody else would get, even if they didn't have a resistant bug. So if someone got a cut working outside in the garden, it got infected, and then you got a scratch and it got infected, your symptoms would be the same. Some redness, some swelling. Maybe it would start to ooze some pussy type of fluid. If it got really bad, it would spread rapidly, could get a fever, those type of things. If you got a respiratory illness, it would be the same thing as somebody else. So based on symptoms, there's not really a way to distinguish those. Now, here's what we would say, though, is if you're in healthcare and you tend to get recurrent infections, let's say you get recurrent sinus infections. So, you know, you get one, get treated, and a month later it comes back, get treated, a month later it comes back, and you were just going back and forth in this cycle, or, you know, maybe pneumonia thing, then you might think about getting screened for that. And there's some screening that they can do in your nose, a certain couple of places on your body, on your skin, and they can screen for MRSA or those resistant bugs if need be. But if you're otherwise healthy and well, and not a lot of worry needs to be going there, Matt, not a lot to do, and honestly, not a lot of worry. It's there, and if you start getting those illnesses, though, then make sure you let your doctor know, you know, the environment in which you work.
Just curious, generation or even just a few years ago before kind of healthcare has changed a bit, but did we run to the doctor too soon or not often enough? In general, do you not see patients until things are serious problems?
You know, we cover both ends of that spectrum, Neil. Sometimes we'll get people who say, oh, I wish you had come. You know, I had a guy again in the ER just a day ago who's having a heart attack, probably been having this for 2 days, and we see some of these changes already happening in his heart. Say, I wish you would have come 2 days ago. But then on the other hand, we get people coming with very quickly, I started with a scratchy throat, a couple hours ago. Well, you probably didn't need to come that quickly, and sometimes we call that the worried well. People who are just more anxious about things, but really things are okay, versus the minimizers, those that have something major going on. So we still see both ends of the spectrum. It's probably good to ask your doctor. I mean, it's a good question. Hey, I came for this. Was that the right thing to do? And your doctor will probably say, oh, yeah, I'm really glad you did. Or, well, if it happens next time, maybe wait a day or two and save yourself a copay.
Speaking of asking your doctor, I know that you've written a book that's available. That's How to Have the Best Doctor Visit Ever. And one of the things I think you talk about is that, we need to be right up front with the doctor right away so we don't – because they don't have a lot of time and we may end up missing a lot of things otherwise.
Oh, absolutely right. Yeah, and thanks for asking about that. It's a new book. In fact, I want to make it available to the My Faith Radio listeners, Neil. It's called My Best Doctor Visit Ever, and in them I talk about kind of 12 strategies that I've observed over 20 years of practice that people, when they put into place, have a fantastic visit with their doctor. You know, the time in the office is getting shorter and shorter. I don't know if you've noticed it, but I've noticed it on the doctor, and I've even noticed it as a patient when I go into my doctor. It gets squeezed more and more. There's more demands on the doctor. The time gets shorter. It gets harder maybe to get in. So, there's all this pressure around it, and it's easy to walk out kind of confused and, wait, what did she say or what did he say I was supposed to do and what happens next? I didn't understand. I didn't follow. What do I do? Do I give up? Well, if that's you, there's hope, because there are indeed some very, very good strategies you can put in place that I talk about in My Best Doctor Visit Ever.
And we'll talk more about it in the moments ahead. BestDoctorVisit.com is the place you can go to find more about that book and download a copy. Talking to Dr. J. Scott Reese, who's a board-certified and award-winning family physician, part of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. And our phone lines are open today. We're taking your medical questions at 877-93-FAITH. Got a couple more to get to after the other side of this break. So join in. If you have a question, you can get queued up right now at 877-933-2484. More with Dr. Reese in just a moment here on Connecting Faith.
Rise above the typical and the anything but usual.
Taking good care of ourselves, it's a responsible thing to do, because our bodies are a gift from God, our health, the air we breathe, all a gift. So we want to honor God in how we live, and we're talking good health today and getting some good health advice from Dr. J. Scott Reese, who's a board-certified and award-winning family physician, part of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. He's taught in private and academic settings, and he is consulted as a medical consultant for a number of major news networks, and we're happy to have him with us today here on Connecting Faith. And we're going to go to Lori on line one. Been waiting, has a question for Dr. Reese. Lori, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. So I have two sons that both have ankylosing spondylitis, and they're older, and one of them has done some supplementation that's really helped him with the pain. And then the other one has chosen to use Humira. I'm quite concerned about that drug and the long-term effects. Can you elaborate on that?
All right. Thanks for that question. And maybe just explain a little bit what she is describing.
Absolutely. Lori, thanks for your call. And, you know, may God give strength to you and your boys struggling with that ankylosing spondylitis. And for the rest of our listeners, what that is basically an inflammatory condition of the spine that causes quite a bit of ongoing pain and inflammation in the back, causing some sort of premature fusing of some of those bones. And it's common in both men and women, and no respect to age or gender. And it sounds like you have two boys with that. So you're really getting to understand that well, Lori. So yeah. Kudos for your listening in and seeing what you can do to help and being concerned about the treatment. So good job there. You know, the issue with ankylosing spondylitis, unfortunately, we just don't know of a cure for it. It's a lifelong condition at this point, but there are some effective treatments that can help. The underlying condition with this ankylosing spondylitis, this issue in the back, the chronic pain, is this. It's one thing. It's inflammation. It is all inflammation-based. So the treatments to alleviate those symptoms, maybe slow progression of that, is, again, all back at what can we do to reduce inflammation in the body? And there's a bunch of things. Now, the standard treatment for this is, because inflammation is the problem, using anti-inflammatories, right? That can help with the discomfort. And, of course, I know you've tried them, things, you know, ibuprofen, naproxen. There's a bunch of prescription options of these anti-inflammatories. And then there's another class of agents we call biologic agents, because they work biologically in the body, so to speak, through injections to help reduce inflammation. And you mentioned one called Humira. And Humira, what it does is sort of suppresses the immune system in a way that reduces inflammation. Now, we have other drugs like prednisone. Prednisone has been around for, you know, decades and decades, of course, for using that, but it has a lot of side effects that are just not healthy over the long run. And if we can use other things that are more targeted, and that's what these medicines like Humira do. They target the inflammation reduction where it's a problem. In your boy's case, at the back. So is it free of side effects? No, absolutely not. I mean, it works to lower the function of the immune system, but because it's the immune system causing this problem, it can have some remarkable benefit. And I've had some patients, even some friends who've had that, and it's sort of a life turnaround thing, not only for ankylosing spondylitis, but other things like rheumatoid arthritis, colitis, and some other things. So it is pretty much accepted as a standard therapy, I will tell you, Lori. Again, not without side effects, not without risks, but what you really need to do is, and what he needs to do, is to weigh the risks versus the benefits. So yeah, indeed, risks there, no doubt about it. But what are the benefits? I mean, if this back pain is so limiting that he can't get out of bed, it's hard to go to his job and get his work done there, or even keep a job. You know, if he's married and has children, pick up his kids, play with them on the floor, all those critical things about life. And this can make a life-changing difference, albeit with some risk that can be monitored. Many would say, yeah, it's worth the risk. But a personal decision, of course, on his part, and input from the family is really critical. Other things that can be done, because there's a lot of natural, often get say, what can I do naturally? Well, yeah, there's a ton that can be done naturally. And just keep in mind that natural treatments for anything don't include just pills. There's other things like stretching. Stretching can build flexibility, strengthen core strength, take the pressure off of that back. It can reduce pain. Heat therapy. Sometimes cold therapy responds a little better. Acupuncture, that's been around for a long time, and this is good science behind specific uses of acupuncture. Maybe that might help. Massage, regular exercise, staying away from things that promote inflammation in your diet, and make sure he's not around anybody that smokes, because good heavens, we know that smoking is pro-inflammatory, whether he does it or whether he's around an environment and other people do. If he's got a job where people are smoking all the time, honestly, I'd find another job. So a lot of options there, a lot to think about, pray about, and of course, talk carefully with your doctor.
A good question, Lori. Thanks for asking that. You know, you talked about, you know, the risks and the benefits. And we, you know, when you see the TV ads, it's a, you know, pill for every known malady. But they start listing the side effects, and you always go, well, boy, that sounds that doesn't sound very like a good trade off. And they, you know, oftentimes they say, you know, ask your doctor about, you know, if we have an opportunity to ask our doctor about one of these, and what are we going to ask them first?
Well, first, just keep in mind what you're seeing on TV is not medical diagnosis.
Okay.
It is marketing. It is marketing. I, good night. What does sitting in a bathtub overlooking a sunset have to do with your health? Right? Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, but everyone knows what we're talking about there. But it's marketing. It's just meant to get into marketing, and you ask your doctor. So that's a very reasonable thing. I mean, you ask your doctor, hey, I saw this thing. But the thing I encourage people to do is not to go to your doctor and demand something you've seen on TV. Once in a while, we'll get somebody that comes in and says, hey, I saw this, and they said it was for this, and I need it. And we may say, well, sir or ma'am, here's why that's not such a good idea for you. So nothing wrong. I mean, I am all for it. And I talk about this in my book, too. Do your homework. Absolutely. And like Lori was doing, you know, investigating these things, checking out Humira. Do your homework. Information has never been more accessible about your health than it is in the 21st century. That's an incredible blessing. Now, the down part about that, there is so much noise in all that information that it can be incredibly confusing. And so no matter how much info is out there, I'll tell you, Neil, you will always need your doctor for this one thing, and that's context. Get your context from your doctor. Do your research, but get the context for your specific needs from your doctor.
Well, speaking of information out there, I mean, do you have a medical website, you know, that you'd recommend people Google? And because, you know, now we're all going at the first sign of something, and we're well down the road to, you know, a serious disease maybe before it's really likely. So is there a site that you would say we could go to? I mean, we'll send people to yours, drreese.com, but anything else you'd recommend or ones to stay away from?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, drreese.com is a good one. Thanks. But there's a couple other great ones. Of course, mayoclinic.org is a great way, you know, based from the Mayo Clinic, up your neck of the woods, of course, and very, very reliable, good, sound, scientifically based information that's there as well. Familydoctor.com. And that's a good one from the American Academy of Family Physicians. Some very good patient information there. WebMD's got some very good things. Sometimes can generate more questions and answers. But so jump on there. Check out a few things. Be careful not to go too deep into some rabbit trails among, you know, Joe's superblogpost.com about his health needs. Yeah. You might get a little, you know, concerned there. But then also when the worst thing in the world pops up, yeah, don't have a panic attack. Take a breath. Say, okay, Lord, I'm just going to pursue this a little bit more, get some context to this, and then run it by your doc.
All right. Well, let's go back to the phones. Sherry is calling in from Cottage Grove. Sherry, thanks for your call. You're on with Dr. Reese. Go ahead.
Hi, Dr. Reese. Thank you so much for giving of your time. I have a question. I have so many friends at church and just people I know that are my age. I'm like 72, and I don't know why, just this last year for some reason, people that were what you call, if you looked at them, perfectly healthy, they've come down with this pneumonia, and they wind up in the ER, and it just keeps going from bad to worse. And I wondered, my reason for calling is, do you have some preventative measures that we can, I mean, that's the last thing I'd want to get because I've seen what it's done to them, but is there things we can do to keep from getting that?
Great question, Sherry, and it sounds like you're in good health, so that's wonderful to hear. And we are seeing, you know, a lot of this, and unfortunately, as you get more mature, let's say, those risk factors increase. You know, things like pneumonia and bronchitis and diverticulitis, all of these things. But yeah, absolutely, there are some things you can do. First of all, honestly, you know, maintaining your health. And I'll tell this to people who are younger now. So for our listeners that are, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, what you do now is going to reflect what happens to you if the Lord gives you life in your 70s and 80s. So that's incredibly important to understand. The hydration, the amount of sleep that you get, the amount of exercise and physical tone you have in your body, what you put into your body, right? You know, the building blocks of your cells are what you consume. And so, you know, garbage in, garbage out kind of thing. Or if you put good, healthy things in, you're going to improve the stamina of your cells and everything else. So for people that are younger listening, absolutely. Listen, great question by Sherry, but address it now before you get there. Now, once you're there, still those things, Sherry, important. Hydrating adequately with water, critically important. Keep those cells hydrated. Harder to do when you're older than when you're younger, but equally important. Getting some regular exercise. The science has proven that you don't need to do, you know, run marathons. In fact, you don't even need moderate exercise, just light exercise. Getting up and moving periodically every day is enough to kind of improve your health, improve your cardiovascular system, and secondarily your immune system. And that's what you're referring there is, you know, the immune system tends to kind of wane a little bit as you get older. So keeping it healthy naturally with sleep, adequate hydration, appropriate diet, good amount of exercise is your number one defense. Now, there, of course, is a pneumonia vaccine that's available. And so talk to your doctor about getting that. If you're not allergic to some of the components, it can be very, very helpful. And again, giving you some immunity before you get to that illness. So think about that. Shingles vaccine is another thing that comes along more frequently as you get age. You know, you get those shingles things, and the vaccine is available there. So what you put in is really the message here. And staying healthy, getting your flu shots once a year, getting your pneumonia shot, you know, when it's indicated, and then staying healthy, other things. That's the best advice I can give you, Sherry.
Thanks for that call, Sherry. I'm talking to Dr. J. Scott Reese today. Dr. Reese is a board-certified, award-winning family physician, talking to him via Skype and getting some great insight today on how we can stay healthy and answering your medical questions. We've got a couple more to get to here on the other side of the break. And if you have a question, there's still time for you to call in at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Or if you want to send in your question via email, you can go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page, and you can submit your question that way, and we'll get it before Dr. Reese as well. We're also going to talk a little bit about maybe some tips for weight loss and all that coming up here. New year, and get some good advice, and also want to kind of circle back to the best doctor visit ever. And you can find out more about Dr. Reese's book on the website bestdoctorvisit.com. So check that out, and we'll be back with Dr. J. Scott Reese in just a moment. Today, thanks to Dr. J. Scott Reese for joining us via Skype today from his office. He's a board-certified and award-winning family physician. He's also a founder of iFactor Health. He's written a book called Best Doctor Visit Ever. You can find out more about that on the website bestdoctorvisit.com, or you can go to his website, Dr. Reese, D-R-I-E-S-E, D-R-I-E-S.com, drreese.com. And a listener wanted to know, anonymous listener says, she says, I have hypothyroidism. Says, what is that caused by? Does triclofan have anything to do with it? Use of toothpaste, soap, et cetera.
Well, thyroid, of course, is a gland that sits in your neck, and it makes a hormone that regulates all your metabolism. And across the board, just about all your systems get touched at some level by the thyroid hormone. And if it's low or underactive, that can leave you feeling sluggish, no energy, weight gain can be a problem, just no get up and go. So, and it can actually sort of move forward as some significant medical problems if not treated. So the treatment is fairly simple. It's taking a thyroid supplement once a day. Now, what causes underactive thyroid? Well, the majority of them are caused by things that slowly kind of interfere or attack your thyroid gland. It's often autoimmune related, causing it to sort of burn out over time. Usually not a lot of symptoms, There's a few conditions that will give an abrupt change to it and makes it swell up and become tender, and then the thyroid kind of, you know, poops out on its own. But most of the time, it's insidious over a period of several years. And so, no, tryptophan, you know, no real evidence behind that to cause that. It's so prevalent in our country. But the big problem I see with people in thyroid is they sometimes don't take it real seriously. And I think, well, you know, what's the big deal? I don't feel that bad. But boy, it can really proceed to some issues. It can proceed issues with your heart, with your bone health and your bone strength, with your overall metabolism, of course, your weight, and secondarily cardiovascular disease and other things. So thyroid's a big deal. It needs to be followed regularly and adjusted with treatment regularly. You know, not really a sort of, people say, was there a quote unquote natural alternative to it? Well, not really. That needs to be refined because they're tiny, tiny doses that you need to take. Very, very refined doses. Often I usually recommend the brand instead of the generic thyroid replacement pill there, but needs to be followed very closely by your doctor.
You know, speaking of weight gain, this is a time of year when a lot of focus on invitations to join weight loss programs, and you know, I've got a sweet tooth, and so if you were my doctor, what would you recommend? I probably wouldn't listen to you in terms of stop eating sweets, but anything that we should be aware of, I guess, in terms of the diet options.
It is that time of year, and unfortunately, it's this time of year every year. And you know, we wind up, this year I'm going to lose. Really, this is the year I'm going to do this. And then, of course, by the time you get to the 1st of February, half of people aren't doing it. By the time you get to April, 3/4 aren't. And by the time the end of the year, 90%, right? 95% maybe have just sort of given up. So why is that? I'll tell you, and really the simple thing to understand is because willpower doesn't work. Willpower will never help you successfully lose weight and keep it off in the meantime. You know, I did a survey about a year ago, Neil, and I surveyed hundreds of people about weight loss. And they were eligible to take the survey if they tried to lose weight before. And I'll bet, but we have probably a few listeners now who said, they raised their hand. I've tried to lose some weight loss and I've tried this diet and I've tried that diet and, this thing and that thing and nothing worked. Or maybe, I lost some weight and every time I lose, I gain it right back in just a short period of time. And I've tried. I've tried eating less and exercising more, as everybody says. It just doesn't work. And my heart goes out to you. In fact, on this survey, hundreds of people told me that same story. One of the questions I asked Neil was, okay, list the diets you've taken, right? So, South Beach diet or, a low-carb diet or the paleo diet or this diet, that diet. And I thought we might have, 12, 15, maybe 20 different diets people would say they've taken. 67 different diets. These are identifiable, well-known, described. I was blown away. My heart just goes out to people. And so this has been a passion of mine for a long time. And I've actually, you were talking a little bit ago, but developed a program online. I mean, people can find it on the website if they want, but it's an 8-week program to walk through people because the reason is it's not math. You can't just eat less and exercise more. I was taught in medical school, calories in minus calories out equals your weight. And I'm kind of embarrassed to say, but I mean, I used to tell people that too early on. I didn't know any better. But then as the science got better, as I started digging and learning more, time out. That's wrong. It doesn't work. Willpower wilts. It's not going to work. We know that. The neuroscience is unbelievable. The brain is so involved in this thing. But it's not calories in minus calories out. There's another factor involved, and it's what I call the I factor. The I factor is this, and it's all related to insulin resistance. Insulin resistance is the underlying problem, I'm convinced, in our Western lifestyle, our Western way of living, that causes our insulin levels to be high, so much so that when our insulin levels are high like this, we cannot burn fat. In fact, there's something that you'll read in the scientific literature. It's these three words: insulin inhibits lipolysis. What that means in everyday English is high levels of insulin block fat burning. You just biochemically can't do it. Now, you can lose weight, right? You can lose muscle mass. You can lose water weight. But if you don't correct your insulin resistance, your I factor, guaranteed that weight will come back. So I like to focus people on, instead of, you know, trying to do this diet, that, what diet do I do? It's so confusing, so much noise. Focus not even on your weight. Focus on your I factor. Focus on the insulin resistance. If you fix that, the weight will start coming off and you'll get to March and you'll be like, I'm feeling better. I'm not giving up. And, you know, this weight loss thing, it can really be successful for me. There's hope.
DrReese.com is a place to find out a little bit more about that. We've got time for about the 3 more minutes or so. Let's take one final call. This is Nadine in Park Rapids. Nadine, thanks for hanging on. You're on with Dr. Reese. Go ahead.
Hi, Dr. Reese. I have what they call pemphigus vulgaris. It's an autoimmune disease of the skin.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on medication. Is there anything I can do? I guess it's my IG levels are high. Is there anything I can do naturally to get my body to stop fighting against itself?
Okay. We'll talk about it here in a couple minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Nadine, thanks for your call. Pemphigus vulgaris is, for the rest of our listeners, kind of a skin condition. You get these blisters and ulcers and erosions on the skin, that scab. It's kind of like eczema. Maybe a lot of our listeners know about eczema, but eczema on steroids kind of thing. I mean, really advanced, and it can be very frustrating because it's not easy to treat pemphigus. It's remarkable, Neil. Actually, so many of our questions today are tracing all back to this inflammation thing and your immune system. And honestly, pemphigus is also an immune-related problem. It's the immune system that starts attacking some of the layers of skin underneath the surface and causing this reaction that settles out just about anywhere on the body. So the treatment is, you know, sort of the medical treatment for this, once again, is reducing inflammation, reducing what's happening with your body's immune system. So no doubt your dermatologist is talking about certain things, maybe some steroids, maybe some of these other biologic agents that we were talking about not too long ago with Lori and her boys with ankylosing spondylitis, but similar things there. Sometimes some immunoglobulin therapy can help calm the immune system there and reduce those things. So, but again, it just comes back. It's astounding to me. It's very interesting on our time today, Neil, but I see this so much. Things that affect our immune system seem to be on the rise. Mm-hmm. So why is that? I think there's several components. First is environmental. We see a lot, of course, the toxins, everything else going around. A lot of things we're putting in there to make this problem. But the second is relating to what we're putting into our body. I'm absolutely convinced that for moving forward, what we are discovering now between, you know, immune science, neuroscience, in fact, we now call, I just tell you this, this whole nother discussion probably, but, you know, type 3 diabetes, you ever heard of that?
Yeah.
I mean, type 1 is, you know, juvenile when you get with a kid. Type 2 is the big epidemic. Type 3 diabetes, most people haven't heard about, because it goes by another common name, Alzheimer's disease. Mm. But we're starting to realize that's inflammation-based as well and insulin resistance-based as well. So I can't stress this enough, like I do to my own patients. What you put in your body, how you treat this body as a temple of God, makes a difference to long-term health, disease, whether it's disease present or disease in the future, makes an incredible underlying. So Nadine, I'd say pay attention to what's going on in your body. Diet and exercise, reduce inflammation, focus your efforts there, and then follow with your doctor about other treatments.
Dr. Reese, thanks so much for coming on today. Wow, what a great hour and wonderful questions and good answers, and something that hopefully will be an encouragement to many of our listeners today. Dr. J. Scott Reese is a award-winning family physician and he's a medical consultant. He's joining us today on Connecting Faith via Skype. He's also founder of iFactor Health. You can find out more about his book, Best Doctor Visit Ever. Go to bestdoctorvisit.com or check out his website, drreese.com. Doc, thanks so much for joining us today, and good health to you.
Thanks, Neil. Thank you so much. God bless you, my friend.
You're listening to Connecting Faith. You can hear the podcast of the interview online at myfaithradio.com.